if you feel overwhelmed, why the fuck wouldn't you ask for help?
Hello, my name is Philip Lee Curtis and this is Fanatic.
Just saying, Stacey's a cunt and she's fat as a pig.
Welcome to Fanatic, the podcast where we dig a little deeper. Each episode, a different guest will talk about life, career, and inspirations, as well as touching on some more personal stories related to mental health. The show is made up of four sections, which should give you a nice, well-rounded look into their lives. The guests are all interesting, funny, charming creatives, many of whom are known around Australia and beyond. And the goal of the podcast is to create something entertaining, not just for you and I, but for the guests as well. And to be a reminder that really, deep down, we're all the same. Today's guest may seem a little familiar to existing listeners, and that's because she's been on the show before. We haven't recorded a follow-up episode, although that would be fun to do at some stage. What happened was when I first started this podcast, I was advised to keep the episodes to 30 minutes. As the show's progressed, I've loosened up a little on that, and most episodes have exceeded that time restraint. And even the episodes around 30 minutes didn't have too much cut out of them, except for this one. Well, and maybe the Adam Richard one, but most of that was just us giggling and being awful to the point that we may be sued if I were to release it. You may also notice that the show has been on a bit of a hiatus. This wasn't planned, but I started getting extra busy with design work and recording an album, and so I couldn't give the podcast my full attention, and I like to have the time to do it properly. Between the guest selection, research, organising the time and place, the actual recording, and then time editing, it is quite a large undertaking for just one person. But I assure you, this is not the end of Fanatic, and I'm even looking at doing some special isolation episodes during this difficult time. I hope everyone is looking after themselves right now too, it's very important. So, because of all of this, I wanted to give you all something to keep you entertained and to act as a bit of a thank you for being patient with me during the hiatus. Here is the original unedited chat with everyone's favourite South African, Kiwi, adopted Aussie comedian. This is Ursula Carlson, extended.
I should say that I'm sitting here with Ursula Carlson in Auckland. Whereabouts are we?
In West Auckland.
West Auckland.
Out in the Waitakere. The Wild Wild West.
Section 1, getting to know you.
Tell me something that you're really good at.
I'm really good at DIY stuff.
Yeah?
Like really good. Like
building IKEA kind of stuff? Or?
No, like ripping out a wall and, and making, so sort of like a friend of mine, I said to her, because she's got carpet in her toilet. I go, no. Oh, that is not right. I go, you need to rip that out and either tile or lino that, but you cannot have carpet. Right. You're not in the 60s porno. So she ripped out the carpet and then she just took PVA glue and glued some tile. She goes, it all just peels off. I go, yeah, you didn't do it right. So I don't know. I don't know if it's the lesbian in me that makes me just really good at DIY or just... Because, yeah, I tile, I can plaster, anything, yeah.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. All right, what about something really bad at?
Staying calm.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm really impatient.
Okay.
So I just want to get stuff done, so I don't have a lot of tolerance for people that dilly-dally, you know? I'm like, can you just get your ass
just
in gear?
Press.
Yeah. I'm not much into the process. I just want the result.
Yeah.
So that makes me quite impatient.
I'm probably, maybe that's a designer thing, because I'm very similar at work.
Yeah.
Like, you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, get out of my way and I'll do it for you. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to do it for you. I don't feel like I should have to. But absolutely.
Yeah. If I need to, then I will take ownership of your shit. Yeah.
And take the credit.
Yeah. Well, if you did it.
Well, true. Tell me favorite song.
Oh, that's a hard one. It sort of changes a bit. Because I used to love Tracy Chapman, anything from Tracy Chapman.
Yeah.
But it recently changed and I have to look it up.
Because I know you've said in the book that you and your wife have very different music tastes.
Yeah, I've got really bad taste in music. Yeah. I've got a playlist here called Gay Times, and this is all of my favourite songs. And then, so whenever we're anywhere and they go, who's got a cool playlist? I'll go, me, and all of my friends go, no, you don't.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like it's Creedence Clearwater and Van Morrison and stuff like that. So at the moment, my favourite song is The Weakness in Me by Joan Armatrading.
Oh, okay, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
I know. You have to look that up. Honestly, because I'm so bad, I've even got on my watch, I've got Shazam, so that if I hear anything good, I Shazam it. So when I was in Edinburgh, this is how I got back onto Creedence and Van Morrison and that, because then I was sitting in someone's show and I heard this and I was like, oh, I know this music, this is amazing, this is my childhood. And then the happy part of it, and I looked and then I Shazammed it and I put it on my playlist. So it's so nice, you know, it's amazing what music can do for your soul.
I don't understand people who don't listen to music.
No.
I've got people, I won't say any names, but there's people in my life who just don't. Then they don't understand what I get from it.
Yeah.
I'm just...
Oh, music helps you. When you go through bad stuff, you listen to music and it can lift you up, it can calm you down, it can... Oh, it's amazing.
Is that something that you use to calm you down?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Totally.
Is it like Enya stuff? Like, oh, no.
No, when I'm a bit worked up, then I listen to heavier stuff like Live or...
Yeah.
ACDC, stuff like that, okay. That sort of, you know, almost meet me and we calm down,
right,
you know?
Down
like, yeah.
What song do you sing in the shower?
I don't really, because I've got two kids that I'm trying to keep out of the shower as I'm in it. So I don't really.
How old are they now?
1 and 4.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the boy just turned 1, so he's so busy throwing everything in the shower. So, yeah, I'm not really a shower singer.
Okay,
I'm
that's like, all
right. Yeah, I just go and get it done. Get out.
Just in, out.
Yeah.
Clean.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Avoid shaving. Get out.
Funeral song.
Yeah. You Raise Me Up by Josh Groban. Yeah.
Wow.
Because I think that will make everyone cry. I always say, you know, like when people die, they go, if I die, I don't want people to be sad. I want people to celebrate my life. I say, fuck that.
Yeah.
I want people to cry. I want them to weep for me. I always say to my wife, I don't even want to know if you want to take another wife. You have to mourn for me for 6 years.
Yeah.
6 years, just black clothes, curtains drawn. You have to, you have to go full hog, full hog. You have to mourn for me in a big way. I want people to weep hard out.
You are so much like me. It's horrifying. This is what I tell people.
I want them to be very sad at my funeral.
Who would you be excited to get a tweet from?
Oh, I got one from Kim Cattrall and Dawn French.
Dawn.
In August.
Yeah.
Both of them tweeted me, so that's already exciting. But if Oprah ever tweeted me, I'd be through the roof.
Really?
Yeah, I love Oprah.
That's your ultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And was that a reply, or did she see
No, that
out?
Was a reply to, she said something. Well, she posted cake. This cake with it, and she goes, well, look at this mess. And I went, that is disgusting. Because it was like a chocolate volcano cake thing.
Yeah.
I go, that is disgusting. I'll be right over to clean that up. And then she replied to that.
That's awesome. Favorite autobiography?
Tina Fey.
It's hilarious. I laughed out loud.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The period anecdote was laugh out loud in front of my friends, embarrassing myself.
Yeah. Everything she said, and I kind of like how she goes, you know, she's got that scar on her face, and the way people approach that and talk about, she goes, that's how I judge people. The way they approach that scar. She goes, if people just go, oh, you've got a scar, what happened there? She goes, immediately I shut down from those people.
Wow.
Who does that? We just walk up to somebody and go, oh, you've got something wrong with you. Let's talk about it immediately.
Yeah. That's probably not traumatic. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I actually never noticed it until she talked about it.
Yeah, same.
And then I looked at the cover. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I looked it up. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, she does too. So obviously you and I are better people. We would be her friends. Call us Tina.
5555. Favorite film?
Favorite film of all time, Steel Magnolias.
Okay. See, I'm a Sally Field fan.
Mm.
She, her son's gay, and I'm trying to make that happen.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. Well, like, I'll do what I can if it ever comes up. Yeah.
Do you have a man crush?
Oh, yeah. I've got a few, actually. In New Zealand, we've got a newsreader called Mike McRoberts, and just because he's got an amazing voice and he's got the best personality.
Yeah.
In Australia, it could even be a touch of Sam Pang, but not in a relationship man crush, but sort of in a brother man crush, you know, where you go, he's so adorable.
Just love the shit
I want him to be my brother or at least my favorite cousin, that type of thing, you know? So not in a I want to shag you kind of way. But then I love Matthew McConaughey. I know it's a weird choice, but I love him.
Okay.
I just think he's just got that enough weirdness and enough. I can be, you know, I'm in touch with my feminine side, but I'm also a man.
And he's got a deep voice.
Yeah, I'm comfortable in the cowboy hat or in a dress. Bring it, you know, like, I'd fuck him. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Who would you hate fuck?
Oh,
That's probably inappropriate, but I'm asking it anyway.
No, totally. I would hate fuck Wanda Sykes because I love her, but she once told me to fuck off.
Yeah.
So, and I think she's hot too, but then I would hate fuck her. Like, I wouldn't let her finish. I'd leave that bitch hanging.
Can you get her really close really and then just look her in the eye and say, begging for fuck it. Off.
Fuck off. And then roll off the bed.
So that, we'll touch on that now because that is something I was going to ask about.
Yeah.
Was it as simple as, hi, I'm a fan, I love your work.
Yeah. It was literally that. It was just the two of us in the artist bar and in Melbourne, Hi-Fi or whatever they call it now. And I was ordering a drink and I looked to the side of me and there was Wanda Sykes standing right next to me. And I'm a huge fan, like a huge fan. And I just went, I'm going to take the opportunity. So I looked at her and went, oh my God, you're Wanda Sykes. I go, I just want to say, I love you. I love your work. I think you're an amazing comic. And she just turned to me and she went, fuck off. And then she walked away. But I think she had quite a few wines in her. So I'm just going to put it down to that. I don't think it was me. I think it was just anyone would have gotten that response. I'm hoping. Yeah.
But what an odd response to give a fellow human.
Yeah, like, but maybe that... she just... Because I'm like, why was she alone? Because I've had some time to think about it. Now I'm like, she was alone in an artist bar. So maybe something had happened at her gig.
Right.
And her people... Because she had people with her the whole time. Her people were dealing with that. And she had come to the artist bar. And she was overwhelmed or whatever. And then... That was her response.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just
going to that you've rationalised it.
Yeah.
I like you too much. I'm going to figure out a way.
Yeah, no, because I think we'll still be friends. Yeah. One day, her and I will be friends. Life she just is. Doesn't know yet. She'll know after the hate fuck.
This is probably the most important question. Who is your favourite Spice Girl?
Ooh. I'm going to have to go with a sporty one.
Yeah, she's my favourite.
Yeah.
Yeah. She... is sporty. Yeah. She can do backflips. She can actually sing.
Yeah.
And just nailed it. She had a gold tooth, for God's sake.
And she likes track pants, so why would you not?
Section 2, the good stuff.
You talk a little bit about stage fright, and you basically talk yourself back into going on stage every time. So what is it that makes you get out there? Like, what is it you say to yourself that says, just get out there, do this?
I don't know if there's something that sort of makes me go, get out there. It's more of me going, you don't want to go back to advertising, you know? So I weigh up the negatives. Like, I don't want to go back there, so I have to go back out.
Yeah.
I just have to remind myself the thrill of it. Once I'm out there, I love it.
Yeah.
But it's literally just that bit, walking from side of stage to the microphone. It feels like the longest walk I've ever made. Like, when I look at the microphone, it looks like it goes further and further away. It's like when you dream, you're trying to run away, but you can't get away.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like for me walking to the microphone. So I try to never look at the microphone. I always turn my head to the audience and look at them and I'll wave at them. But that's sort of just me going, is that mic stand?
Yeah. Do you see anyone or are you just looking at a blur?
No,
yeah.
Just look at the blur.
And have you ever gotten up to the microphone and you haven't switched over and you just get to the microphone and you're still in that?
No. As soon as I have that microphone in my hand, I take a second to put the mic stand behind me.
Yep.
And as I put it down, I give a huge breath out. And as I turn, I'm ready.
Cool.
So it's sort of, I figure if I was an athlete, that would be the last bit of warm up that I need before I run or whatever.
Yeah.
So as soon as I turn, breathe in, start.
Yeah.
Then I'm ready. I don't drink before I go on ever. Like, I don't even have one drink. So if I go somewhere and I don't know, for instance, I'll go on and I have a couple of beers or a couple of wines and then someone goes, oh, a comic just cancelled. Can you go on? Do 20? I'm like, ooh, okay. And then I go out on stage and I'll do the 20, but in my mind, it can never be good because I had a few drinks. I didn't have, like, I usually have about 2 glasses of water before I go on stage. And if I don't have that, I'm like, oh, like, I can still work. It's not debilitating.
Yeah.
But it irritates me when I'm on stage. I'm like, this is not as good. They don't know. Yeah, they're being cheated, you know.
If I don't have the nerves before I go on, it's all over.
Yeah. Then I get nervous about not being nervous. Then I feel better.
And then, oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. And I know you talk about, you come on stage and you say to the hecklers, don't even, because I'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious thing that you were like, I just don't want hecklers, so I'm going to tell you.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? I don't really get hecklers anyway, But I want my audience to know that I won't pick on them.
Yeah.
So then it just sort of became part of the, like, I wrote a whole bit about how I won't pick on my audience and how
yeah.
I know that they're nervous and I just want them to be at ease in a show where yeah. they can just relax and listen to some jokes, you know, and yeah. just chill out. So, but then I just got to where I thought, I want them to know that I'm serious. So I go, I just want to talk about me. I don't want to talk about you. And then it just sort of escalated to, don't fucking talk to me. Okay. And then I figured, you know, because once or twice people, they're almost participating in the show. Like you'll ask a question to the audience and then one person, and it's usually someone that's quite similar to my mum, because my mum lives herself into a show so much that she starts asking and commenting on stuff during the show. And you're like, we're not having a conversation. But then afterwards, other people will go, oh, it's so irritating, that person talking or whatever. And then I was saying, people pay money to come and see you. And for some people, when you talk to your audience, like I like to talk to my audience afterwards to sort of get yeah. a feel. Like I always go out and talk to them. But then some people go, you know, we never go out. This is the first time in 6 years we've gone out or whatever. You know, like they've had kids or they've had financial troubles. People tell me these things. And I think, you know, some people take their money and they go, this is the only money we have for entertainment. Yeah. They spend it on my show. And I don't want some fuckwit that's had too much wine yeah. to ruin it for this couple.
Yeah.
So I always go, you know what? I've got this. I wrote a show that'll cover an hour or an hour and a half, however long the show is. Don't talk. I know how it ends. This is my time. I rented this venue. I'm paying for everything in here. So everyone can have a good time. You fuck up and I'll do it.
I know you've talked about when you will tell a joke, sometimes you'll embellish on things and yeah. add to it. Do you ever forget the reality? Because you tell the yeah. joke so many times,
yeah.
you go, oh my
shit.
It
becomes new now. Yeah. yeah.
It's like, remember
yeah,
that
so
time.
Something small will become bigger, bigger, bigger. And then, but even in my head sometimes, I remember things bigger than they are, because as soon as something happens, in my mind I already right. start rewriting it yeah. for the stage. So then when I get home, I'll tell my wife and she goes, I was with you. It was a small little thing. I go, you know, but it's bigger now. Okay. And then she goes, all right, all right. So she understands now how it works. But yeah, immediately, as soon as something happens, my brain just starts rewriting it.
Yeah. You being a designer,
yeah.
do you do your own posters?
All of them.
Yeah? Yeah. Awesome.
And I judge other people for these. When it's festival time, I look at all the ones, I go, you used a professional, you did not.
Okay. So Lucy Lawless is someone I'm a big fan of, and mm-hmm. you have a quote on the book.
I do.
From her. How did that happen?
Lucy and I are friends.
She's the best.
Yeah. I'm going to see a show on Wednesday.
Which is amazing. Pleasure Dome.
Yeah. We, in a weird sort of roundabout, I had just started doing comedy like 8 years ago, and it was her 40th birthday, and I was watching the breakfast television was just on. And she was on promoting something or talking about something. And then, you know, they sort of do this quick fire questions. And one of them was best comedian or something. And she goes, Ursula Carlton. I was like, what? And then, she in the Sunday paper, there was something about me too. And then she phoned me. She got my number or someone else, another performer. And she goes, look, it's going to be my 40th. I'm putting together the show at the King's Arms where just me and some of my mates, we're going to sing.
Yeah.
Some tunes, and do you want to come open for me? And I went, yeah, all right.
Hell yeah.
So I just went and did like 20 minutes, you know, yeah. MC sort of a thing, and it was amazing. And then, yeah, we just hung out in the green room, and then it just, you know. When I was looking for a quote for my book, I was like, who can I ask? And then I thought, I'm going to ask Lucy. She's like amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah. So because of the way you present, everyone kind of feels like they know you. You're very friendly. Yeah. People can come up to you. What's that like? Even today, you're coming here, you're meeting me. Yes, we met very quickly once,
yeah.
but you don't know me.
No.
What's going through your head?
You know, whenever, because I always say, like, you can't live with regret, right? That's yeah. my big thing. And whenever anybody has the courage to reach out and go, can you meet me? Like, I've met just fans that have said, I want to have a coffee with you. Yeah. And then if they don't creep me out too much, you know, then I go, yeah, sure. If people have the courage to ask and they go, I'm starting this thing or I want to do this or, you know, can you do it? And I'm like, yeah, because if you're brave enough to put yourself out there, then I should meet you. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, I think it's the human thing It's like someone reaching, like, you know, we're all on a cliff's edge, all of us. And somebody puts a hand up, and most people just look at the hand and go, oh, there's a hand. But why would you not grab it? You know, like...
No, absolutely.
Because you don't know when your hand's going to be popping up from that cliff.
And a lot of people are afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to ask.
And social media teaches us that, because people say on Facebook all the time, they go, oh, I saw, say, Lucy Lawless today. I so wanted to say hi. You go, why didn't you?
Yeah.
Like, literally, why didn't you? It's so Wanda Sykes tells you to fuck off, you know, but at least I told her how I feel.
Yeah, like, I got to do my thing.
Yeah.
And I've, my thing is, the worst someone can do is say no.
Yeah.
So, or ignore you. Yeah. And that's okay as
but
well.
But how awful would it be? You would never know if you don't ask. You know, then, you know, my mum always tells me this story. I always remember this story. She goes, this guy drove on this farm road once and his car breaks down. And he sees the problem, he just needs this wrench to fix the problem. And he sees in the distance these lights on a farmhouse. And he goes, I'm going to walk there, I'm going to go ask the farmer for this wrench. So he starts walking. And then in his head he goes, I hope they're still away. And then he walks a bit further and he goes, I hope the farmer's not in a foul mood. He walks a bit further and he goes, what if I get there and I ask for the wrench and the farmer says no? And he goes, I'll just explain to him. Then he walks a bit further and he goes, but if the farmer's rude to me. So he plays out all these scenarios in his head.
What if?
Then he finally walks up to the front door. Now he's so worked up. He knocks on the door. The farmer opens the door and he yells, take your wrench and shove it up your fucking ass. Because he got himself so worked up. And then he turns around and walks away. His car's still broken and the farmer's going, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
So that is the thing. If you don't have the courage to ask, but in your mind you go, if I'd asked, this could be what could happen, or this, you know, you work out all these scenarios because it's the human condition, but you don't give the farmer the opportunity to help you.
Yeah.
Maybe the farmer would have gone, yeah, man, get in the tractor, I'll go tow it in, you can have something to eat, we can fix it after dinner. You know, you don't know.
So good.
Yeah. So I always remember that story. So sometimes, even when I'm getting frustrated, my mum would just look at me and go, is that farmer shoving that wrench, is it? And I go, fuck, you're right.
And it sounds like your mum has had a lot of those kind of stories and that kind of influence on you
throughout
your life.
Yeah, that's, she's very calm fantastic. And clear. Well, she's all about the process, whereas I'm no process, just result.
So you didn't know much about comedy before you got into it.
No.
So did you have any idea, you go to these gigs, you start doing variety shows and things like this, did you know who anyone was?
No.
It was purely you.
I even did a TV show called The Radio with two guys that were both on the radio here, Paul Ego and Jeremy Corbett. And they were both quite, you know, like well-known radio DJs, and they're both comics. And so we did this TV show called The Radio, and it was all about, I'm their receptionist, but I don't know who anyone is, because I literally don't know who anyone is. And then they get all these big... musos and, you know, like John Turgood and I'm like, who? Like, I literally had no idea. So we sort of, in this TV show, take the piss out of how I don't know anyone else. Yeah. But yeah, even now, like, I'll meet people and I don't know who they are. Like, I'm getting better at it, obviously. Yeah. But
you probably know them more as peers, rather than someone that you saw.
Even like, this is me meeting Rhys Darby. So I'm at the Classic, the comedy club in Auckland, and I go in and he's sitting at the bar. He's chatting to another comic, Mike King, who's also been a comedian for like 30 odd years. And he says to me, oh, you're Ursula. I go, yeah. He goes, I've heard a lot about you. I go, oh, yeah. And he goes, are you on tonight? It's like open mic night. I go, yes, I am. And he goes, oh, yeah, I might check you out. I go, I'm sure there's tickets available. Still, like, and I point them to the ticket booth, and my wife's like, no.
Oh my God.
I'm like, what's wrong? She goes, that's Reese. Like, okay. Yeah. And in my mind, I'm like, so she knows him. Like,
yeah, that's her mate, Reese.
Yeah, he still needs a fucking ticket. So we go up, she goes, that's Reese Darby. And she's sitting next to him, and I'm like, huh? And then after she goes, oh Christ, this one Flight of the Conchords, Reese Darby. I'm like, oh. And now, of course, I know who he
is. That's hilarious. How are you at the business side of things? Is that something you've sort of passed off to someone, or have you had to control a bit of that?
Like, I've got an accountant now.
Yeah.
And a lawyer. But before that, I had to do everything myself. I'm not very good at that, because I'm not good at numbers. Like, you know, now I go, it's because I'm creative. Like, that part of my brain doesn't want to work. But my wife's really good at that sort of thing, so she used to run that a bit. But now it's, especially because I'm in Australia so much and, you know, overseas. So it's like, it's just become a different beast. So I've had to get an accountant, a proper full-time accountant, and I've got a lawyer that does all my contracts and stuff.
What scares you on stage? Is there something that you just would never do on stage?
The only material was that I wouldn't do on stage is abuse and rape. Yeah. I don't talk about that. But otherwise, no, I'll do...
Would you sing?
Eh?
Would you sing on stage?
No, I don't sing.
That's the one that a lot of people go...
No, I'm so out of tune. I can't even... I lip-sync Happy Birthday.
See, so you stole two guns from your uncle's sock drawer.
Yes.
And accidentally
with
shot...
With my brother.
With your brother.
Yeah.
And accidentally shot a police officer's bike.
Yes.
And you've just returned to South Africa.
Yes.
Is there a warrant out?
No.
Because now that you've told that story, people might know.
Yeah. No, I'm like, I'm just leaning towards the fact that maybe it would have, you know, how certain crimes... are only valid for like 5 or 10 years of it. So, yeah.
You assume shooting.
Yeah, that's gone now.
Imagine if you'd shot him.
Oh my God, my life would have been completely different.
Like,
you
ran though, just keep running. He wouldn't have been able to chase you.
Honestly, kids, we were dumb, you know, irresponsible. And he shouldn't have had guns in his sock drawer.
That's very true. He might have gone to prison.
Yeah,
hopefully. So you've also said that you were quite poor when you grew up.
Yeah, very poor.
And a lot of what you didn't... You're too poor to dream, is I think what you said.
Yeah.
And a lot of your fun was with your brother running around and your mum would read to you in the back garden and things like that. Mm. So those kind of... I think anyone who's been in that situation, you grow more of a backbone, I think.
Yeah.
And how now that you're doing well and you've got income and all of this, how do you pass those things on to your kids, the importance of a dollar and all of that kind of thing?
I don't know if I'm doing a good job on that, because I spoil the shit out of them. Whatever they want, they get. But also, what I like, I do a lot of charity work. Like, at least once a week I'll do something. Like this week I've done a fundraiser and a charity drive. And it's like, and I try and take the kids with, so that they can see these other people. And I, even with their toys, it goes to Women's Refuge, the older toys. We go, you have to pack these things now, you know, before Christmas. All the stuff that, you know, sort of the excess stuff, we're going to send it to Women's Refuge. And then I say to these people that don't have what you have.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's great.
Yeah, I think it's hard to sort of... They'll never have that full picture, because even with my wife, she grew up and they just, you know, they weren't super wealthy, but she never wanted for anything. Right. So it's even hard for me to explain to her. Like, when we just started living together or whatever, and she took a year off work to decide, you know, she wasn't happy with what she was doing. I go, then take a year, you know. I'd rather live in a studio flat and be happy than have you miserable every day after work. I go, and then decide what you want to do. And so she did that, and then a few times, you know, it was tight, like, and I'd say to her, yeah, we don't have money, say, for the movies, and she goes, we won't go to the pub beforehand, we'll just go to the movies. And I go, no, you don't understand, when there's no money, there's no money.
Yeah,
there's not a bit of money. Like, I'm not playing, there's no money. Yeah. You know, like, and I think if you haven't grown up like that, it's hard to explain to someone how, you know.
You know, I remember when my parents had separated, we had to return groceries. Like, we got to the front counter, and I think being 10 and seeing your mum, who's meant to be in your eyes the strongest person in the world, having to quietly and be embarrassed about it, put stuff back because you just don't have the money for it, that's when you go, oh, okay,
I think the first time he said, you go, what is happening? And then every time after that, we're like, I remember going to the supermarket with my mum in my mind calculating, you know, like, I'll ask her, how much money have we got for groceries? And then trying to keep that in my mind, you know?
But I think it helps later on.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to, when I was studying, I was probably getting, I was working at McDonald's, so I'd have maybe $90 a fortnight. You know, nothing much.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah.
And I somehow still managed to get the main things I needed.
Yeah.
So there is a way. You just got to sacrifice sometimes and
that's what I always say to people now when they go, they're not happy with their jobs. I go, and quit. And they go, yeah, well, I don't have that kind of money. I go, it's amazing with how little you can make your life work.
Yeah. You know? And like you said, happiness isn't necessarily your job or, you know, where you live. It can be, it is a choice. It's a state of mind. So you were proposed to by a guy with a paperclip.
Yeah, a paperclip ring. He had plaited. I still have it. He had plaited the paperclips together, like this loopy, loopy ring with a little... It was actually quite pretty. Yeah, in a movie theater. Yeah.
That's amazing. And you had to turn him down for now obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And do you know what happened to him?
Yeah, he still lives in Texas.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is he aware of what's happening in your life?
Oh, I think he must be, because I'm not Facebook friends with him. I don't think he's on Facebook. But I'm Facebook friends with two of his old flatmates.
Okay.
So, and they still have, I know the one guy still have contact with him. So I'm sure he sort of knows. I think he's married now, and yeah.
Special edition. Okay, this one is just a quick one. This is a special segment just for you, based around your show, Unacceptable. These are a few things that I personally believe are unacceptable, and I just want to see if you agree. Fuckwits.
Oh, unacceptable.
People who drive on the road when I'm also driving on the road.
Get out of the way. Unacceptable.
Slow walkers.
Unacceptable.
Saying no to dessert.
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. This is a hypothetical. Like, it's a made up scenario. People who think that LGBT people are anything less than equal.
Unacceptable.
Unacceptable. Literally anything that Tony Abbott says.
Unacceptable.
People who don't flush the toilet or use the toilet brush in the office, even though they're grown-ass adults and can turn around and look down.
Oh, you shouldn't even be shitting at the office. What the fuck is wrong with you?
See, this is my personal stance on it, is I used to say never. Never do it. As I've gotten older and I realise sometimes you just have a bad day.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be uncomfortable from 10 o'clock until 6. So if I need to scoot off somewhere.
Fair enough, yeah.
But I'll try to clean. And I'll clean it. Because I'm a grown up.
Oh, always clean. Always clean.
And the last one. Me.
Oh, why would you be unacceptable?
No, I'm acceptable.
Little bitch.
Section 3. I'm your biggest fan.
So who do you think has been the biggest personal influence in your life?
Oh, my mum.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I kind of like her. I don't know her. But I'm liking her gems.
Yeah.
Her
little... Yeah, she's real calm and balanced. Yeah.
What about who in the public eye has been your biggest influence?
Comedy-wise, I like to think Robin Williams.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's amazing. Or Betty White.
Oh, heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like 90,000.
She's a machine. Yeah, she's in her 90s and she keeps going and... It's like everything she touches is just... Like, I'm sure she's, you know, she's made shit in the past, but...
We don't say it.
Yeah, she's been consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there something in your life that you dedicate an embarrassing amount of time to?
Like, not working in the garden. I'm not a gardener, but I love mowing the lawn and, you know...
Really?
Doing edging and shit like that.
What is it that you get out of it?
Because I just switch off.
Okay.
You know, like, because my brain always goes, even at night, like, going to sleep. It's
3 a.m. I've got to be up at 5. I'd better think about everything I've ever done.
Yes.
Every decision.
Yes. So that's me. Like, my brain, I'm just always thinking about different scenarios for everything. So it's like, when I'm doing something where I go, you're holding a tool that could potentially rip your arm off. So, you know, like, I don't think about anything but the grass flying or the wood.
Maybe the noise?
It's amazing. Yeah.
Do you collect anything?
Watches.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many would you have?
Heaps. Like...
Heaps.
Yeah. Ones that's like actively in my cycle that I wear often. About 20 good ones. Yeah. I like a big watch with white. So I can clearly see it on stage without obviously looking at my watch. Like, I'll just hold on to the mic stand, quick look, and then carry on.
Yeah. Do you have a set list on stage with you?
Sometimes.
Somewhere hidden. That's something
sometimes
I always wonder
on my
about.
Stool, where my water is, I have a little note. Once I start with the set list, once I have it on stage, say at the beginning of a festival, it almost becomes like my... crutch. I need it on stage all the time. I don't even need to see it. I just need to know it's somewhere on stage.
Yeah.
Because I say it for so many nights in a row, then I go, have I said that? Oh no, that's where I am. Okay. But just as I have pick up my water, I'll have a quick look, put it down. There we go.
Now, you've already talked about Wanda Sykes, but is there anyone else of your idols that you've actually met?
I met Alan Carr, which I think is amazing.
Was he lovely?
Yeah, he was amazing.
Yeah.
Sarah Mulligan, she's lovely, and I think she's so funny. And I opened for Chelsea Handler.
Wow, okay.
And I love her show. Yeah. I love her show. So I got to open for her in Auckland, and she was just so nice.
Yeah, awesome.
And she's exactly as she is on television, just a bit mental, but real friendly. Yeah.
Yeah, which, that's a modern woman right there.
Yeah.
Section 4, I'm a bit mental.
Now, this is just, I'm just going to list off from your book some of the shit you've gone through. You ready?
Okay, go.
Just don't cry.
Oh,
you had an 11-inch cyst that went septic and you had to have removed, and they took your kidney at the same time.
Yeah.
Your dad chased you around with a gun and was generally abusive.
Yeah.
There was a bombing in your town.
Yeah.
A baby giraffe fell in a pool, and when you got it out, it hurt a snake, so you had to shoot it in the head.
Yeah.
Awful. Apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's, is it Omar Wiley?
Yeah.
Is that how you say it? It was a close friend of yours who passed away.
Yeah.
You had your car stolen.
Yeah.
And you were hiding your sexuality at the same time. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Have you ever had anyone just list it all? And
no. No, but then also when you listen, you go, well, that's not too bad.
I'm doing all right. Nailing
that's
it.
All right. That's all right. Yeah.
And I'd love you to tell this story, because I thought it was really sweet. The story when you came out to your mum.
Oh, yeah. In my mind, I was gearing. Like, I was like, on one hand, I didn't see the need to come out. And on the other hand, I'm like, I should probably come out. Anyway, so my mum was working at this vet's office. She had a stroke, and then she stopped working as an accountant. And then she worked as a receptionist or nurse's aide at this vet's office. And she came home one night, and she said to me, do you know Dr. Andy? And I go, yeah. Do you know Dr. Andy's son's gay? I go, no. She goes, do you know how Dr. Andy knows? I go, no, I have no idea. She goes, well, his son just phoned him and said, hey, I'm gay, and now he's gay. I went, yeah, I think it's more than just that phone call. she's like, no, I'm just saying, if I had to get a phone call like that from any one of my kids, I'd be fine with that. I'd be happy about it. Fuck, I'd be proud. I went, like the only one of your children that's not married and that doesn't have a kid. She goes, yeah, one of those. So it's me, right? I go, all right. So the next morning, because she even said to me she'll be at work a bit earlier and everything. All right. So the next morning, 7 o'clock, came and went, and then 7:15, I phoned her and I said, hi, this is your call. And she goes, why haven't you told me years ago? Like, she was upset that I went, I didn't see the need in it. And then she just kind of went off. But yeah, so super supportive. My brother and sister, I just texted. I said, I just told mum I'm gay. And my brother's like, yeah, sweet.
Cool.
I actually secretly tested the waters with him first. We were at this theme park, just him and I, because we get on real well. And we just went to, like, it's like our version of Disneyland.
Yeah.
And we were just there, and he goes, whoo. There's a hot girl that walked past us, and he went, whew, wouldn't mind that. And I just kind of looked at her and went, yes, son. And he went, and he sort of just looked at me, and he lifted his eye of it, and he goes, I hear you. And that's it. That's awesome. The only. So then when I sent them both a text, my sister's like, did you just group text us coming out of the closet? Not even something awesome. I thought you people were supposed to do it in a big way. That was it, you know. My family's so gay friendly, it's almost embarrassing.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's like, this is too much. Yeah. And I had sex with a man last night. It was too much for me.
My mum is so all about equality. Like, she was so anti-apartheid that we nearly got kicked out of the country.
Wow.
We were going to move to Australia, actually, as a child, because she was hiding black people in her house. And the government found out, and then she got a warning. So she's like, I can't live in this country with my kids. And she's so gay friendly. And so I knew she'd be fine. My brother is so gay friendly. He's like one of the biggest dudes, you know, he's like a dude bro, one of those.
But a lot of them are really great because they're so comfortable in themselves.
Yeah, give a shit. He could not give a flying fuck. He goes, I love hanging out with gay dudes because all the chicks want to talk to them.
Yeah, true.
He's like, yeah.
So, what do you think is the main struggle you've had to overcome?
I think it's almost the same. I think everyone's got it. Trust.
Okay.
You know, I think at a certain level we all struggle with, you know, but especially like I struggle to trust people because you don't know when people will go off. And in my mind, that's how I guess, because, you know, growing up in South Africa, where we had civil unrest the whole time, so people were so charged the whole time.
Yeah.
So you sort of didn't know when anyone was going to go off. And my dad was a real charged guy, you know. So sort of in my mind, when I just started meeting people as an adult on my own terms, you know, not through a parent, not through a teacher, just me, I kind of expected everyone was going to go off at some point. And it took me a long time to realize that most people are just people. They're just normal. They are consistent.
Yeah.
There's no going off for everyone. But in my mind, there was always going to be that pop. There was a pop at the end.
And clearly that came from your dad by the sound of it.
Yeah. Not all people lead to something explosive.
Right.
Yeah. Well, not all situations. The same, you know, with... So I think
that's
that was
a hard
the
lesson,
biggest thing.
I think to learn is that past things that other people have done to you, which may have caused some trust issues, you can't apply that to someone else, but you still have to listen to your gut.
Yeah.
There's that mixture
cautious,
of going...
Yeah. Like, am I cautious or am I... You know, a coward.
Oh, yeah. Is that something you still struggle with now?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, because now I'm like, even if they do go off, it's their issue, not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I no longer take responsibility for their shit.
That's a good way to be. So you do talk about, on stage, you talk about weight and all of this sort of thing. Is body image something that's ever really affected you, or you just don't give a shit?
I honestly don't give a shit. I know it's hard for people to wrap their heads around, but I don't care. If you're 100% fine with who you are, like even my sister's a bit like this. Before they leave the house, they look at themselves in the mirror and go, Christ, look at the state of me. Oh. Whereas I'm literally, I've never had that, where I look in the mirror and I feel, before I leave the house, my thing is more about what's my mindset at the moment. Like if I go, fuck, I'm happy, you know, I'm just chill, or sometimes I think I'm too up for a situation,
really?
Like I'll be too overly excited. Yeah, like, you know, because then I risk being the biggest personality, I'll overwhelm the situation.
Right.
Like, so sometimes I'm like, okay, I just need to chill out of it. So to me, it's more a mental thing when I go out than a physical, like sometimes I have to go, oh wait, I can't actually leave the house like this, you know, like, yeah. And also when I think... and when I had my kidney out, this was sort of a big thing for me. There was a lady, Mrs. Dos Santos, that was with me in ICU, and I got really sick. And another lady in ICU went through a big thing at night, and the whole team was sort of reviving her.
Right.
And Mrs. Dos Santos got on my bed, and she sat with her legs. She's a yoga instructor. She sat with her legs crossed, holding the vomit bucket for me and having her own vomit bucket in her lap. And every time I vomit, she'd vomit. And she's in her 80s. And all I can remember is she was this really warm, lovely old lady that would sit on my bed at night just talking to me, you know, because I was it was pretty full on.
How long were you in hospital?
2 weeks, or 2 weeks in ICU and a week in high care. But it was pretty, because it was like, the whole incident with my kidney was like a couple of days and then in hospital, like it was emergency surgery. Yeah. So all I remember about Mrs. Dos Santos is she was this lovely, warm Portuguese lady. And then when she got discharged from hospital and I got moved to high care, I said, I'm going to miss the old bird, you know. And my mum, my sister goes, fuck, but she was not an oil painting. And I went, what?
Oh,
and she goes, she was easily one of the ugliest people I've ever seen in my life. And I, to this day, I can't remember her face.
Wow.
I can't remember what she looks like. I just remember she was lovely. That's all. And the warmth. I remember she was a warm, lovely lady. But I can't picture her face at all.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm like, that's how I see it. Like, it's not a thing. I don't think the physical aspect of, you know, what people look like matters to me at all.
Great.
Yeah.
And that's something, part of what I've gone through. A lot of the people in my life were all about how you look.
Yeah.
And that fucked me up because I felt like I had to look a certain way. Yeah. Never really judged other people for how they looked.
Yeah.
So why was I putting that pressure on myself?
Yeah.
I think that's a tough lesson for some people to learn.
Yeah. But you know what? When you love, like, say your mum, right? You love your mum.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, That mole of hers looks really angry, though. And then you look at your mum and you go, oh, she does have a mole on her face. And you go, I never noticed. Like, when you love someone or when they're good to you, you don't notice the shit till someone goes, you can see she was a smoker. And then you go, can you? And then when you see them again, you go, oh, yeah, I guess you can. It's not till someone, you know.
I always wonder about those people, the ones who have to point it out. I'm like, what went wrong here?
Yeah, I know. Like, that's a different beast altogether.
One of the quotes that I actually put on Instagram from your book is, I'm always a bit amazed how we as grown-ass adults can treat each other badly and not take responsibility for our own shit.
Yeah.
And I think that pretty much sums up our entire conversation.
Fuck yeah.
Because it just baffles me sometimes how cruel people can be.
Yeah.
And yet you hold that mirror up to them.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah.
They're not aware. And it's, so when people say things like that mole on that person, it's like, have you looked in the mirror? Like,
You know what I always find fascinating? When you look at people's... because my Facebook, you know, like, it's not a private one. I use it for work, right?
Right.
So there's... what's the limit? 5,000. There's 5,000 people on there that I don't know necessarily. Like, some people I've met... some I haven't, but then I read their Facebook, because I'm an avid people watcher, and I love the human condition. I love watching the shit that people go through. And they write something, you know, like people write these caution rant, you know, ahead or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they write this thing and they go, you know, some people just won't give you the fucking time of day, or some people this, and they put all this bitching down, or people are so mean and cruel at her. Then the post before that would be like, just saying, Stacey's a cunt and she's fat as a pig. And you go, okay, you're that person.
Oh, you don't understand the link between all of that.
You don't understand not to be an asshole. You're an asshole, and then when someone treats you like an asshole, you take offense.
I also love when it's like, that's it, I'm done. But they don't tell you what they're referring to.
I've never had enough. Yeah. I've had enough. That's my favorite one, when people go, I can't do this anymore. That's it. And you're like, then everyone's like, I've just sent you a DM.
Yeah. Babe, tell me, I'm there for you.
Give me a text. Yeah. I just texted you.
What's something that you've learned to love about yourself?
Apart from the impatient thing. I struggle to say no. You know, like I was, like this morning, I was actually really good. Someone had just met me in a lobby after I did a gig, and then I was just on my way home. And
this
I
morning? Go, you did a gig this morning?
No. I got the email this morning from the weekend. And she goes, oh, I ran into you, and it's for, you know, Body Positive.
Yep.
The AIDS Foundation runs it. And she goes, this T-shirt design, and you can come and MC it, and you can model this. And I was like, I'm happy to design a T-shirt, but I won't be MCing, and I won't be... you know. And she's like, oh yeah, cool, of course, we're happy for you just to design a t-shirt. And I'm like, normally I put so much pressure on myself I have to go MC, so I work like 360 days of the year, you know, it's insane. I've recently realized that I have to put myself first, because every year I get a massive chest infection and I lose my voice. And I was like, I think it's my body's way of saying, can you just chill out and give us a break. So now I'm trying to be better at saying no to certain things. Like, I don't need to do every gig in the world. I'm already ambassador for some stuff that I believe in, you know, for like breast cancer and that. So now when people approach me, I just go, sorry, I can't do it.
Cool. And now we're back to talking serious things. Now something, and you don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but something that you talk about in the show is losing a child. My sister has gone through that a few times in very, very similar circumstances. And holy crap, that's important to talk about.
Yeah, man. Because you know what? It's like, people don't talk about it because it's not, you know, like, they didn't look into the eyes of the child or whatever. So they go, oh, it's not, you know. But it's devastating. Like, it, you know, not just for the couple, but like, if you know your sister's expecting the baby, you know, like, there's a new member of your family coming, and then there isn't.
And you're planning for it.
Yeah.
And you're excited about it.
Yeah. And then nothing.
I think the most shocking thing that, and it's, maybe it's that people don't talk about it because they feel ashamed, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when it happens and it looks like a baby, that's the thing that people don't know. That it's a little version.
It's a baby. Like, I held ours And it had everything. It had literally everything. And, you know, so it's like, but I, like in my show, I say too, like my, you know, my process was grief, you know, for the loss of this child. But my wife's was self-blame, and her body had failed, and her body killed this, but, you know, something she did killed this baby. And I'm like, nothing prepares you for that. You can't, but you also can't say to someone, just get over it, walk it off, you know. It's a process, you know, and it's devastating.
And was that hard, given that you were in more of a grief stage and she was in a blame stage, for you to meet in the middle and pull yourselves back together?
No, I think it was actually because we were very, we talked about it, and we talked about everything, you know, from this isn't what I expected. I said to her, when I looked at the baby, this is how I felt. And she goes, yeah, I was like, we were both surprised, you know, like just we were very honest with how we felt and what we went through at that. And I said to her, this is where I am. I feel like I'm grieving for this baby. And she goes, I'm sorry. And I go, why the fuck are you sorry? You know, so we were just very honest. And the more we communicated, the easier it was, you know. So I knew exactly where she was at every step, and she knew where I was. So I didn't assume things about her process, and she didn't assume things about mine, because I think that's when you get into strife, when you think we're all on the same page, but we're not.
And that's communication is all of it. So all of these things that you have had in your life, have you sought help? Things like that, have you, how, what have you coped?
I've had counseling for, you know, some stuff. I've been for anger management to curb my impatience, because it's, I'm impatient, but it comes across as anger, which, so, you know, sort of just, and even, I did a parenting course, and it's, it comes back to trust. It's like, am I gonna blow at the end, you know? Because I think it's important that if you're not sure, because like we said before, if you're not sure about stuff, like if you have doubt about anything, you ask for help, you reach out. So if it's something important like mental health, or you go, I'm not sure about me or about big decisions, you have to reach out. Like it's irresponsible not to.
Totally, and it just gets worse.
Yeah.
What do you see as good mental health?
I don't know.
Still searching.
I don't know if there is a. I think being honest with yourself and being honest with others. Not hiding things, which comes back to honesty.
It's toxic hiding things. I think especially anyone who's had to come out as well. You know, holding it's a secret good. Is not
no.
good.
No, not for anyone.
No.
Because it's again, it's a. It comes back to the farmer. You know,
totally.
Yeah, and it's, I think you're not also trusting the farmer.
Authentic as well. Yeah. You're not being the person you really are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and you have nothing to offer when you're so busy hiding shit, because you're not looking up. You're so busy, you know, just keeping everything together.
Yeah.
That you don't open and go, oh, this is who I am. Let me reach out and help. You know, can I help who you are, and you can help who I am. You know.
Yeah.
You can't do it. It's honesty, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this you've kind of already answered it, but what advice would you give to someone struggling with these things that you've struggled with?
Honesty and honesty. Talk to people.
Yeah.
Talk. That's... Don't be afraid to ask for the wrench.
Yeah. I love that. That's great.
It's inappropriate question time.
Okay, we're up to the last little section, which is the inappropriate question, but you get two. So, inappropriate question number one, do lesbians have tops and bottoms, or is it just a free-for-all?
In our house, it's just a free-for-all. I think there is some, because it's, you know, like, there's definitely some lesbian couples where you go, oh, okay, you're the daddy.
Yeah.
And you're the, whereas, in ours, it's, we're all about equality.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. Although I always mow the lawns.
Is that a euphemism?
See, but I... No.
Although, yes.
But since you asked.
The second one is, now this was probably a joke that you told, but apparently you steal other people's sex toys. And I was wondering, if you had to steal someone's, whose sex toy would you steal?
Oh my God. Oh, I'd go for Pink.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd steal her.
Because you drink and she'd have the good shit.
Yeah.
She'd have
and
the good
lot
shit.
Of it.
Yeah. And the batteries would always be charged.
Why the hell not?
Honestly, when I meet people who don't have it, it's like seeing a unicorn. You're like, why the fuck wouldn't you?
Yeah.
My friend, the one that I said to, she had never been into a sex shop. And B, we were talking about lube. And she goes, we don't need lube. I'm doing all right. And I went, yeah, it's not really about that. Lube sort of enhances the experience. Yes. I go, you get lube that makes you tingle, lube that heats you up, lube that, and she
tastes
goes,
good.
What? I go, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I go, because she's not into, going to sex shops or any. She's actually quite a prude,
yep,
which is weird for a comic, but also quite common. Like, they okay loudmouth and vulgar on stage, right, but in their private life, they're quite prudish. So I said to her, let's go grab lunch. So we go out for lunch, and then, homo. And then afterwards, because I picked her up, I said to her, on the way, we stop at a sex shop and I take her in, awesome, and I buy her first sex toy ever.
What was that?
Just a little pink vibrator.
Heaven.
And she's like, oh my God, I'm so, and like, she's so busy looking around, making sure no one sees it. I go, trust me, this will change your life. And then we got her some of that his and hers lube, and she went home and she's like, I'm never going to try this. And then 3 days later, she sends me a message. She goes, I have not left my house thinking I've had the best fucking toy. Now, her and her husband are into it. She's like, oh my God, it changed our lives. I go, yeah. Like, sex is supposed to be fun. Like,
absolutely,
you're in a relationship. Like, go for it, man. And if you're single, even better. Go get whatever the fuck you want.
I think that's the difference. When you're single, this is something I've come up against, where you can't quite open up as much because it's one-night stands, it's hookups. Whereas when you're with someone more consistently, even if it's more of a friend with benefits, you're kind of like, okay, let's explore this a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important for people to explore on their own.
Yeah.
If they are on their own.
How do you know what you like
exactly
if you don't give it a go?
Exactly. Yeah. The thing I say about the plebiscite at home at the moment is that if you've ever wanted to stick it anywhere near someone's butt, you have to vote yes. That's the law.
Yeah.
And every straight man would have to vote yes.
If you've ever wondered, it's a yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's go home and try out the toys.
You're an animal.
Oh my goodness.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Fanatic. A big thank you to my guest, Ursula Carlson. If anything we talked about upset you, feel free to call Lifeline Australia on 13114. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions, feel free to get in touch on Twitter at FanaticPod, or you can contact me personally at PoshLopez, and of course you can reach today's guest on Twitter at Ursula Carlson.